This is Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. In the next half hour, we'll present highlights of a major conference held in early April about Colombia. The Institute for Policy Studies, in conjunction with the Latin America Working Group and the Colombia Human Rights Committee of Washington, D.C., coordinated the conference entitled Colombia's Crisis and Its Implications for U.S. Foreign Policy. The full-day session explored the complexities of the crisis in Colombia and how Washington's role may be exacerbating an already difficult situation. Coming up next on Our Americas. On Saturday, April 18th, while I was working at home, a friend from the Colombia Human Rights Committee of Washington, D.C. rang me with some more bad news. She called to tell me of yet another political assassination against somebody working for the defense of human rights and social justice in Colombia. Earlier that day, gunmen disguised as television journalists entered the Bogotá office of attorney Eduardo Umaña Mendoza. They tied up his secretary and they killed him. The 50-year-old Umaña was a high-profile lawyer who was known for defending guerrilla leaders, trade unionists, human rights workers, and family members of the victims of the political violence. His most important case was representing leaders of the National Oil Workers Union, who were charged 2 years ago with conspiring with the National Liberation Army to blow up oil pipelines in the countryside. Umaña's murder was the third such murder of a leading human rights activist in Colombia in less than 2 months. Just 2 days earlier, Communist Party member and longtime human rights activist Maria Arango was killed at her door by multiple gunshots. On February 27th, gunmen killed Jesus Maria Valle Jaramillo in his Medellin office. He had accused the army and high-ranking politicians of sponsoring right-wing death squads, responsible for the deaths of hundreds of innocent civilians throughout the country. The murders of Umaña, Arango, and Jaramillo have raised the ire of the Colombian human rights community and civil society in general, and has led people to call for a broad front to put an end to the political violence. These murders represent a new wave of repression against all those who are fighting for a political, peaceful solution to the war in Colombia and for a change in the economic and political order that benefits from that war. Human rights workers and social justice activists are under constant threat in Colombia. Last year, Amnesty International closed its office in the country because of death threats. In fact, I remember when I first met Eduardo Umaña Mendoza back in 1991. It was under very difficult and very similar conditions. I went to his office for a lunch meeting only to have it postponed because he had just received a series of threats against his life and he was forced to flee to Chile. At the time, he was getting very close to nailing a number of top-level military officials implicated in the massacre of 7 people in the town of Fusagasugá. Apparently, they weren't too happy with his meddling. 2 threatening calls and several anonymous letters were enough to convince him and his staff that he had to go. So he excused himself politely, saying that he hoped I would understand and that one day we'll meet again. Well, we did meet again several times, as he eventually returned to Colombia to fight against those same forces that eventually took his life last Saturday, in his office, in downtown Bogotá, by gunmen who gained access by posing as television journalists who were there to interview him. While we can't pin the blame on his murder on the United States, there's no question that Washington can share in some of the responsibility. Colombia has the worst human rights record of any country in the Western Hemisphere. 3,500 people died in 1997 in political and extrajudicial killings. Over 1 million people have been displaced by the violence in the last 10 years, and U.S. military aid has quadrupled to an estimated $100 million in 1997, despite the abysmal record of the Colombian military, and despite calls from the Colombian civil society demanding a peaceful resolution to the conflict, not an escalation of war. The U.S. response has been to increase military aid, ostensibly to fight drugs. Here in the U.S., people are slowly beginning to wake up to this major policy disaster. There's a growing movement of people and organizations that are now doing work on the case of Colombia in an effort to call attention to the escalating conflict. Much like the Central America solidarity work of the 1980s, the focus of much of this renewed interest in Colombia is on United States policy. But whereas in Central America the battles were placed into the artificial context of the Cold War, the struggle in Colombia is obfuscated by Washington's unyielding determination to win a drug war, one that's increasingly becoming more militarized. There are now Colombia human rights and solidarity committees cropping up throughout the country, working under 2 loosely knit entities known as the Colombia Human Rights Network and the Colombia Support Network. along with the Washington Office on Latin America, the Latin America Working Group, Amnesty International, and the National Committee on Refugees, they're trying to reframe the debate about Colombia away from the drug war and militarization to human rights and a pacification of the conflict. It was in this spirit that the Institute for Policy Studies held a conference in early April, which brought together Colombian and U.S.-based NGOs, State Department and Colombian government officials, academics, and activists. One of the speakers at the conference was Coletta Youngers, senior associate of the Washington Office on Latin America, who called for a broadening of the U.S. policy debate over Colombia.
The bottom line is that the United States is fueling war in Colombia when it should be fueling peace. We at WOLA believe that U.S. policy toward Colombia should have a very different strategic focus, and I will outline specific steps to be taken toward forging a more constructive policy toward Colombia in a minute. But first, what I want to do is step back and take a look at what is wrong with present policy and how the policy debate has shifted over the last year or so, because we have seen very important shifts. First, I'm going to look at the single issue focus of the United States on drug policy with regards to Colombia, and then do a brief critique of U.S. international drug control policy and its negative impact on Colombia and U.S.-Colombian relations. Second, I will describe how the policy debate has changed over the last year and the range of issues that are on the table right now, some positive, some negative. And finally, I'll conclude by looking specifically at the proposals that I mentioned for changing policy. The human rights crisis in Colombia has generated significant concern within the international community. If there's one country that has human rights reports written on it, it's Colombia. I have a whole bookshelf full of nothing but human rights reports on Colombia. These have particularly come from international bodies such as the United Nations, Human Rights Commission, other rapporteurs, et cetera, the Organization of American States. Both of these have conducted numerous missions, issued numerous reports on Colombia. We saw the opening of the office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights in Colombia. It's one of only two such offices in the world, and I understand that Mary Robinson has just announced that she will be traveling to Colombia. We also have frequent resolutions by the European Parliament, that sort of thing. But traditionally, it's been seen within Colombia that Europe is concerned about human rights and the United States is solely concerned about drug policy. And I think until last year, U.S. policy in Colombia was very exclusively focused on one issue, drug policy. Successive debates over certification have held hostage other important aspects of U.S. policy, such as political violence and initiatives for peace, the issues that we heard about this morning, and economic and trade interests. These have been held hostage to drug war politics. I personally believe that present international drug control policies are fundamentally flawed in their approach and are not bearing fruit. And I think this is very evident if you just look at the situation in Colombia. Since the drug war was launched, we've moved from having one cartel, the Medellin cartel, to a myriad of smaller cartels, as Alejandro described earlier, which are much harder to infiltrate and dismantle. There's no evidence that less cocaine is coming out of Colombia. On the contrary, it may have actually increased. Coca production in Colombia has increased by more than 50% in the last 2 years alone, and it is now the region's leading producer of coca, which is used for producing cocaine. And we have poppy production for heroin also on the rise. In other words, despite the millions of dollars spent, we're talking about over $500 million by the U.S. alone, and countless lives lost, there may be more cocaine and heroin flowing out of Colombia than before. I think that this should be food for thought and careful reflection about the nature of U.S. policy. Unfortunately, it's not impact, but domestic drug war politics that seem to be driving the policy here in Washington. These trends really began when President Bush announced the Andean Initiative in 1989, where the role of both local and U.S. military forces took on much greater prominence. And there's two crucial elements of the Andean Initiative that I'd like to point to here. One is the provision of police and military aid, which skyrocketed to new levels. Military and police aid was front-loaded in the five-year program, and the Andes became the primary recipient of U.S. military aid and training in Latin America, replacing Central America. As has been described here, the vast majority of that assistance has been going to Colombia. For those of you who haven't seen it, Adam Isaacson of the Center for International Policy has prepared this very useful chart out here, which lays out just the assistance over the last couple of years going to Colombia. Second, there's particular concern in the region with the role prescribed for Andean militaries, which in fact resisted being involved in the drug war for many years. There was a new term coined, military law enforcement. For those of you who are political scientists in the audience, that may be puzzling, but that is what we're doing, promoting military law enforcement. Given the situation in Colombia, which has been described to us today, I think it's simply impossible to provide assistance and training to the Colombian Armed Forces, and the Army in particular, for counter-narcotics purposes exclusively. As one high-level official recently told me, even if we wanted to, we could not prevent U.S. assistance from being used solely for counter-narcotics purposes. And as Winifred pointed out, the kinds of training that we're giving, the kinds of equipment that we're giving for counter-narcotics are just as applicable to the counterinsurgency effort. In other words, the very nature of the way in which the U.S. is waging the war on drugs in Colombia ensures that we become ensnarled in the most brutal counterinsurgency war taking place in the hemisphere today. These trends in U.S. policy toward Colombia have not changed with the Clinton administration. On the contrary, they have escalated. Since coming into office, the Clinton administration has put much more emphasis on democratic institution building and economic development as important cornerstones of U.S. international drug control policy. However, in practice, there's been little change in the programs implemented on the ground, and the militarized approach, if you will, to drug policy was reinforced, I think, tremendously by the 1996 presidential elections, where each party sought to out-tough the other. And as I noted, Colombia has borne the brunt of this situation of drug war politics. Drug war politics in that year led to the first decertification of Colombia in 1996. It's led to the quadrupling of security assistance to Colombia since that country was first completely decertified, and it has perpetuated the exclusive focus on drug trafficking in bilateral relations, despite the ongoing problems of political violence, of which drug trafficking is an important part, but only part of the story. This single-issue focus really began to shift last year, and for the first time, human rights became a visible issue in bilateral relations. There was the release of the Human Rights Report by the U.S. State Department in 1996, which, for those of you who read these reports, really represented a dramatic departure from previous reports in terms of its portrayal of the situation in Colombia. Human rights groups have widely applauded both the reports in 96 and 97. There were a series of very strong statements issued by the U.S. ambassador at the time in Colombia, General McCaffrey, others who traveled there, particularly with regards to paramilitary activity. And there was the whole debate around the signing of the end-use monitoring agreement, or the military aid agreement, to allow assistance to the armed forces. So I think it is fair to say that there has been, at one level, clear pressure on the Colombian government and the armed forces to clean up its act with regards to human rights, and it's probably the most significant factor in steps taken by the Colombian Army at the beginning of this year, which announced a new strategy to combat paramilitary groups. And any of you who are interested in this can get this very nice glossy magazine on sale in any Colombian bookstore, which lays out this strategy. It has a very interesting photo, which I just want to draw your attention to on the first page. It has a cloud of tear gas in the background and the army running out, and it says, "The military forces surrounded by the love and support of civil society." Interesting picture. But they did issue this strategy, and we'll see what happens. Last October's municipal elections in Colombia also represent a turning point of sorts. There was much more attention in the U.S. media, in the mainstream media here, to the problem of political violence in Colombia. Primarily that was focused on the guerrillas, but some attention was also given to paramilitary groups. Other elections have been bloody, but these elections made the U.S. press, and that brought people's attention to it. So we now have a situation that we're in now where there is a real policy debate underway, which I think could go in very different directions. And I want to stress that right now there is a lot of discussion about the way in which policy should be going. The administration is being pressured from all sides, and now's the time to voice your opinion, if you have one, on where you'd like to see that policy go. On the one hand, the broadened focus, the ability to see, you know, the issue beyond drugs in Colombia, has brought important issues onto the table, which I think are quite positive, such as the need to move beyond the annual certification debate, which led to this year's decision to grant a waiver to Colombia, the need to improve bilateral relations, regardless of who wins the presidency. We seem to be on a better track there. And the potential U.S. role in a peace process in Colombia is also on the table. But there's also growing pressure, particularly from Capitol Hill and also from the U.S. Southern Command and others, for greater U.S. military involvement in Colombia's internal war to confront the perceived narco-guerrilla threat in that country. And I want to underscore again the importance of drug war politics. This is an election year, and for any of you who were at those hearings yesterday on the Hill, that was very evident. And there are certain, particularly Republican members of the U.S. Congress and on the International Relations Committee, who get a lot of mileage out of blasting the administration and the Colombian government on this issue. So there are a lot of possibilities under discussion about the ways in which the United States could support the Colombian armed forces. Further expansion of security assistance, including more lethal forms of aid. As one aide said, the floodgates are being opened. Stepped up technical support via training programs, possibly advisors. Intelligence support, the sale of more sophisticated weaponry. Some of you may have seen in the newspapers last week the discussion about the potential sale of Cobra attack helicopters to the Colombian armed forces. And there's others out there, but this is all on the table right now. Clearly, this would be a very different sort of involvement than the U.S. was engaged in Central America in the 1980s. The ideological underpinnings of U.S. involvement are less compelling or evident and are not likely to garner public support. Despite, I think it was it Representative Burton yesterday who said, we're in danger of losing the entire northern tier of South America. Only 3 hours from Miami, yes, that's right. If the U.S. were to step up its involvement in Colombia, I think it would be much more behind the scenes. It would be much quieter. It'll be harder to monitor. But it would be a huge mistake. It would get the United States involved in yet another unwinnable war. It would implicate the United States, as we are, I believe, right now, in human rights violations and paramilitary activity because of the connections that we heard this morning between military and paramilitary activity. It would be a huge policy quagmire. And if we continue down the dangerous path that we appear to be on, it will be quickly turn into a policy nightmare for those of you in the administration. So what should we do in Colombia? Drug trafficking, the guerrillas, the paramilitary groups clearly represent a threat to Colombian society. The question is, what is the best role for the United States to play in addressing those issues? And I want to be very clear here in saying that we understand this is not an easy issue. There are no simple answers to the very complex problems that we're dealing with in Colombia. And I very much appreciate the efforts of Mr. Gallucci and others who are grappling with these really tough issues and trying to find the right road. WOLA believes that the U.S. government should continue to expand its focus with regards to Colombia policy. We also believe that a significant reduction in drug production and trafficking in Colombia can only be achieved in the context of a peace process aimed at reducing violence and ending the long-standing civil war. Toward that end, we have five concrete suggestions for moving toward a more constructive policy. The first is to move away from placing drugs at the center of U.S. policy and, in particular, the certification process that keeps drugs at the center of the debate. Every year we go through the same thing on Capitol Hill where we rate what Colombia and other countries' progress has been on the drug war front. The waiver this year was a step in the right direction, but the bottom line is the threat of a decertification is hanging over the head of this Colombian government and whoever comes into office next August. The bottom line is we need to dump the whole process. The certification process should go. Second, we need to work with the Colombian government and neighboring countries to reduce the flow of weapons to guerrillas and paramilitaries, and we should continue and more vociferously oppose the paramilitary expansion that's taking place in that country. Third, we should vigorously enforce the human rights conditions on U.S. foreign aid that Winifred has laid out. I've been deeply disturbed by the reports in the press. Some of you may have seen the Washington Post article on Saturday, I think it was, that said there are two units, as was indicated, that have been approved for assistance, but for one of those, they're pending the transfer of two members of that unit out before aid can go forward. That guts the intention of the law if you simply move people out instead of seeking justice before providing aid to those units. Fourth, we should fundamentally shift the nature of U.S. assistance to Colombia. That assistance should be oriented towards strengthening civilian and law enforcement institutions and anti-corruption mechanisms that are needed to combat drug trafficking and to promote human rights and democracy. We should stop fueling the war. I don't think the Colombian army should receive assistance under any circumstances, Leahy or no Leahy. We do need to support the police. But law enforcement assistance should be oriented toward promoting sound criminal investigations targeting drug kingpins and others higher up on the chain. It should be sound investigative police work. not eradicating coca fields by destroying a delicate ecosystem and taking away the livelihoods of thousands of poor Colombians. We should also support efforts to control money laundering, precursor chemicals, and to combat corruption. Those are all very important, and the U.S. has been involved in some of those. We should provide assistance to democratic institutions, particularly judiciary. I've been advocating for many years now that the United States provide assistance to the Human Rights Unit of the Fiscalía, the Attorney General's Office, which is investigating abuses by guerrillas, paramilitaries, and government forces. And we should provide humanitarian aid to the displaced and others affected by the war to the extent that we can. And finally, we should actively support a peace process in Colombia. I think the U.S. does have a very important role to play despite the tensions and relations over the last several years. And as you know, I think in this town there's a lot of skepticism with regards to the possibilities for a peace process taking off in Colombia. But what we heard from Miguel earlier today is that there is tremendous pressure building from below in Colombia for some kind of negotiations or talks to begin after the next president takes office in August. Something clearly is going to happen there. We obviously need to wait and see. We need to respond to Colombian initiatives. But there is an important opportunity to support peace in Colombia that's coming up. And there are two very concrete things the United States can do. We can use we should use strict conditionality and political leverage on our own allies within Colombia to get them to the bargaining table to become involved in a negotiated peace. And second, we should help mobilize the support of neighboring countries. It may not be appropriate for the United States to be one of the amigos that Miguel described, but we can certainly help get other countries involved in that process. So just to conclude, I think we're in a period of very intense debate over Colombia, on U.S. policy toward Colombia. It does provide us with a very important opportunity to move in the direction of supporting human rights, democracy, and peace, all of which are fundamental to addressing the drug problem. The Clinton administration must take advantage of this moment and not bow to the pressure of those on Capitol Hill who are calling for more direct forms of U.S. intervention and involvement in Colombia to combat the narco guerrillas. In the next few months, as Congress debates the 1999 Foreign Aid Bill and a new president takes office in Colombia, these months will be key in determining whether or not the U.S. will continue to wage war or whether we will join Colombian civil society in seeking peace. And I think that the steps that I've outlined above would move us in the right direction. Thank you.
Coletta Youngers is a senior associate of the Washington Office on Latin America. She was speaking at the conference entitled Colombia's Crisis and Its Implications for U.S. Foreign Policy, sponsored by the Institute for Policy Studies on April 1st. And you're listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. One of the major problems facing Colombia today is that of forced displacement, a situation that has escalated to emergency proportions in the last 4 years. The International Red Cross estimates that there are over 1 million internally displaced people in Colombia. While much of the solidarity work with Colombia has focused on U.S. policy, today, more and more groups are beginning to realize that this is a matter that must be addressed as well. To get a sense of the dimensions of the issue, we'll hear now from Diana Avila, Andean Region Director of Project Counseling Service. She gave an overview of the problem of forced displacement in Colombia.
While the generalized violence in the country is the principal cause of displacement, the process can also be explained as a consequence of regional economic processes. That is, different sectors can use violence to develop, accelerate, or impede regional economic transformations. The most recurring case is the concentrations of land, a process that in many cases has been laid by drug trafficking, and because of its magnitude has been called a counter-agrarian reform. It also has to do with the exploitation of natural resources in very rich and national reserve regions. In some cases, it has to do with the mega projects developed by multinational companies, as well as opening an area with new roads, etc. Unable to face such complex problems, the people have no other choice but to flee, and they do so on a massive scale. The majority of the displaced people continue to move silently, individually, with their families, or even in groups, trying to erase with their flight their past and attempting to avoid further persecution. These thousands of displaced people are not part of the statistics, and the majority have not sought help to find alternatives to reconstruct their lives, leading many to suffer through difficult moments. Nevertheless, in Colombia, it is more and more common to see the massive exodus of whole populations seeking temporary refuge in the large cities, Bogotá, Medellín, Barranquilla, Cartagena, or in the mid-sized cities like Apartadó, Montería, Yondó, Barranca Bermeja. According to statistics provided by CODES, the Consultancy for Human Rights and Displacement, 28% of the displacement in 1997 were categorized as part of a massive exodus. As an example, only in July and September of 1997, paramilitary actions caused the displacement of nearly 3,000 people. We can say that this is a change in the patterns we knew of displacement in Colombia, and that has happened in the last 2 and 3 years, and mainly in the last year. And this is very important for international community to know, because even people following the situation in Colombia in our visits in relation to presenting the situation of Colombia in Europe, for instance, we realized and we got questions like, is it true that there is 1 million of displaced people in Colombia? Because if there was 1 million, I would have seen them, they said. And that meant that they were thinking on Africa, and I mean, huge camps of displaced people in Africa, which were on the television everywhere. And the Colombia case wasn't seen with the seriousness that it should be seen. We believe that it's very important for international community to assume that the Colombia issue of displacement is very serious, and it tends to increase, which is the most worrying situation.
Diana Avila is the Andean Region Director of Project Counseling Service. She was speaking at the conference entitled Colombia's Crisis and Its Implications for U.S. Foreign Policy, sponsored by the Institute for Policy Studies on April 1st in Washington, D.C. In future programs, we'll play more highlights from the conference over the next few months. If you're interested in obtaining tapes of the conference, you can call the Columbia Media Project in New York at 212-802-7209. That's 212-802-7209. And that's about all the time we have on today's program. How Americas is produced at the studios of WBAI Pacifica Radio in cooperation with NACLA, the North American Congress on Latin America. It is funded in part by grants from the Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media, the Funding Exchange, and the New York State Council on the Arts. Associate producers are Sarah Gill, Amy Standen, Walter Krakmal, and Laura Tarantini, with production assistance by Vicky Hippel and Miguel Gonzalez. Thanks to Winifred Tate and Maria Victoria Maldonado. If you have any questions or comments, you can send us an email at mmcompa@igc.org. That's mmcompa@igc.org. For Our Americas, I'm Mario Murillo. Thanks for listening, and stay strong.